and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Ed McKnight. And today on the show, we're talking about funding secrets for property traders. And I'm so pleased to be joined on the show by John Moody. He's the Chief Financial Officer at Base Corp Finance. John, welcome along to the show.
Thanks, Ed. It's great to be here.
And any long-term listeners will notice, I don't have Andrew along with me today. He's just had a medical appointment, but he'll be back on the show tomorrow. And the reason that I wanted to get John on is the non-bank lending space, we get so many questions about it, but there's not always some very clear information out there. So we want to talk about Base Corp because we've mentioned them on the show for a while. And on top of that, we really want to talk about property flippers and property traders. Now, John, how would you define what a property trader is, and are they coming back into the market?
Well, perhaps I'll start with Base Corp, who some of your listeners may not know. We're a non-bank business that writes almost exclusively through mortgage advisors. So our customers are the advisor community rather than individual borrowers. We advertise solely within that segment, and we're a real champion of the advice sector itself. You know, they've had to endure significant regulation in recent years, and we're really encouraged by the improvement in advisor applications. Within our own residential mortgage business, we've got a long-term 30-year mortgage product, forms around 80% of our book. And the remaining 20% of our book encompasses what we call short-term lending. So property trading, asset lending, small-scale development, and other circumstance-based lending. What we've seen over the last 6 months, together with increasing signs, I think, of early green shoots in the property market, is that property traders and asset-based financing has really picked up. Our own loan volumes are up 30 or 40% from late 2022, which I think is really encouraging and is demonstrating a lot of confidence and, you know, I think a rebound in the property market. Although it's worth noting, it still remains very subdued compared to 2021. And I suppose to round off with traders, the traders that we deal with are primarily those with the model of a buy, reno, and flip, with the reno being cosmetic only rather than a long-term development angle. We also see a few aiming to buy below market value and sell immediately, although it's, you know, that's slightly more difficult model unless the market's slow or dislocated. But we have seen a few in the market now just with the absence of buyers there.
Okay, so we're primarily here talking about flippers. And when you're looking to finance a deal, what's kind of the average length of time between drawing down the mortgage and paying for that property and then ultimately selling it?
Most of the terms we see are 6 months. So a property trader will get in there, there'll be a small cosmetic reno, might be paint, carpet, minor renovations, with a view to selling and concluding the transaction within 6 months. For slightly more extensive renovations, we might see 9 to 12 months. We don't tend to go ourselves past 12 months, and we don't see a lot of demand for the product out past 12 months. To the extent we do, we generally look to house people with our longer-term product, which is a more traditional 30-year mortgage.
Okay, that makes sense. And let's say that, I mean, we're getting to the details now, but here we go, John. Let's say that I want to flip a property. I come to Base Corp and I go through my mortgage advisor to do it. And I say, John, I want my mortgage. I think it's going to take me 6 months to buy this property, do my reno, and then sell it. What happens if the market turns bad and it takes me 9 months to sell that property?
So the way we typically structure our loans is that we start with a six-month term and we incorporate a degree of, you know, extension within those loans. So it's a typical 6 month. But to the extent you go over that, we incorporate three what we call one-month extensions. So they're brought into the contract by default. And then to the extent you need more time, there's a pro rata fee attached to that extension, and we do it monthly. So you've got 9 months essentially as part of a six-month deal to sell that property. So we're already envisaging a bit of, you know, market duration risk, if you like.
Yeah, okay. So it might cost me a bit more money if I go over that 6 months. And do you see, because I know a lot of people listening will be like, oh, that's quite interesting. So maybe the average flip might take 6 months. Do you know, on average, how often people are going over that six-month period, or is that pretty much what everybody sticks to?
I think it depends on the cycle. Yeah, we've been doing this for a long time now, certainly since 2012-13. What we saw through 2012 up to about 2021 is very few property traders going through that six-month period. The market was buoyant. It was an easy market to understand and clear stock in. And you could get in there and really, you know, get stuck in and settle within 3 or 4 months. What we saw, particularly in 2022, but also 2023, is that, you know, clearances took a bit longer. Days to sell within the market lengthened out. And so we saw a number of traders going slightly past that 6 months. We still saw within that a lot of successful deals, but definitely the duration lengthened slightly.
Now, John, most banks won't touch a property trader or a property flipper. Why is that?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think first and foremost, there's no short-term mortgage product for the activity. So the banks do all this work under a longer-term credit policy. And when they're repaid at month four, there's an inevitable level of disappointment. And they're just not there for a second round. I think the second part is no real fee involved at the bank level. So the cost model just doesn't work as part of that underwrite. And finally, I think just in general, the activities are uncertain and difficult to box into a credit policy, whether that's the costs involved in the renovation, the duration of the funding, or the value of the ultimate sale price or exit.
Yeah, that's what we often say on the show, that the bank is really there and the way they're set up is to make money over 20 to 30 years, you're paying that mortgage back. And so there's a lot of upfront work to get the money lent out to you to approve that mortgage. But because they aren't charging you a fee like a base corp or other non-bank lender would, they're not making as much money. And so that's a great time to ask about fees. What does the typical interest rate and cost look like if I want to do a property trade through base corp?
We've tried to stay pretty consistent with our offerings. And so yeah, our short-term rates form a close range. You know, currently, they're between 11 and 12%, depending on whether the customer is servicing interest or requires capitalized interest. And the type of asset involved, so yeah, primarily land or housing. I think with the next OCR move increasingly looking like it's going to be down later in the year, we expect to continue to lower those rates in the years ahead. So I think yeah, we see those rates as a peak and we should see them come down from there. I think in terms of fees in the industry typically range from 1% to 2% for non-bank lending, depending on the type of asset and duration. And our own fees are very much in line with that.
And one thing I've always wanted to ask lenders when we get them on the show, how do you decide what your interest rates are? What's the process for deciding whether you're going to increase or decrease your interest rates?
So for us, there's probably two factors going on. One's what's happening with our underlying cost of funding at any point in time. We fund, non-banks fund in a range of different ways, but primarily we use warehouse funding. So we use major bank funding. We source through Australian banks and through secured asset warehouse facilities. Stuff they're funded by both the cost of borrowing, so a margin, but also an underlying bank bill rate, whether it's 30 or 90 days. And so as that shifts around, that changes our cost profile. And so we adjust accordingly for that. As we've had a stable OCR for a year and a half, that funding rate has been pretty stable also.
Okay, so just walk me through that. So when you say you've got warehouse funding, my understanding of how that works, and you're going to correct me because I don't know anything about anything, is that the Australian banks have given you a massive loan, and it might be a facility of however many million dollars, and then you can draw that out to go and lend to these different property flippers. Now, the bank bill rates, whether it be 90 days or 30 days, those are pretty well advertised. They follow pretty closely the OCR. So if the OCR goes up, they tend to go up. If the OCR comes down, they tend to go down. And so that's really your cost of funding. But is that how it works? You've got this big, effectively, facility where you can go and draw down money from the big Australian banks, and you take out little parts of that to go lend to Mr. and Mrs. Smith who want to do some property flips.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that the key thing is that these are wholesale lines of credit. They're subject to selling assets to the vehicles in return for an advance rate against the assets. So for example, we might sell a dollar of property trade loans to the securitization and receive 90 cents back, and we'll hold 10 cents back as essentially a subordinated debt piece within that, or first loss piece. So that to the extent anything goes wrong with those loans, we'll take the first hit, and then the banks will take the second hit.
So one other thing that I know a lot of people are going to be interested in, John, is just the typical deal. So what does the application process look like if I want to flip a property and potentially use base corp?
For base corp, a typical deal is simpler than you'd think. Almost every deal we get is introduced via their advisor network. And in many cases, these are your typical trade deals. So buy, rent, and flip. In this instance, we look at predominantly experience and the security on offer. We don't require servicing calculators or look at income typically. And often we can simplify the application process and limit the amount of supporting docs we require. You know, we're still ensuring that the customer has the ability to meet repayments, whether that's via cash reserves, income, or a combination of both. We can be flexible in those circumstances. And we've also got the ability to capitalize payments depending on the LVRs. So there's many options available, and it's just about coming up with the right option for the circumstances. Other than traditional trade deals, we're seeing an increase in short-term close and open bridging for a variety of scenarios, including debt consolidation, new purchases with current properties to sell, and customers that have purchased off plans during the peak of the market and have now decided to on-sell. So I think a range of different applications depending on what's going on at any point in time in the market.
And what sort of LVR would I need to have? What sort of deposit would I need to have to get a loan approved through Basecorp?
So most short-term lenders will, you know, be quite conservative on the LVRs. To the extent the market downturns, we're obviously looking to avoid any losses on those loans. For us, because we lend via warehouse facilities, we have the RBNZ speed limits imposed upon us through those vehicles. And so for us at the moment, we're a 65% plus fees LVR lender, although with the imminent change in the RBNZ LVR restrictions to 70%, we'll expect to mirror that and move up to 70%. But at any point in time, you don't see a lot of short-term lenders go above 70%, and that is certainly the case for us also.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. I have heard that through the industry that although as a non-bank lender, the LVR rules technically don't apply to you, but they can be imposed on you anyway because you get your money off those major banks.
That's right. And the RBNZ said specifically to those major banks that to the extent you are using warehouses to fund other mortgage participants, you need to impose those same rules that you're subject to on those non-banks. So no surprise. And I think, you know, while debt-to-income ratios are a different piece, we're expecting those to be imposed on us also.
So you're going to have to look at debt-to-income ratios, even though you mentioned before that you don't look at servicing when you're currently looking at mortgage applications.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be on the longer-term product only, and that because we don't assess income, it's very difficult to calculate a debt-to-income ratio on the short-term book. So I think we'll escape that form of regulation on our short-term book, but certainly on our long-term book, although we haven't received any clarity, whether that's from the RBNZ or our major bank partners, we're expecting DTIs to be imposed on us for longer-term, more traditional mortgages, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, now one of the things you said that you look for before you approve a mortgage at Basecorp is experience. So if I'm listening to this show, I'm just getting started, I want to do my first flip. What do you need to see from me to approve that application?
Ideally, we'd just like to see that you've done your homework. So a plan in place for the proposed project, a budget that's reasonable and it's been well thought through. If you're working with a property mentor or coach, that provides a small amount of additional comfort that you've been guided by experience, but it's not essential. I think a lot of people get sucked into the excitement of seeing before and after pics, seeing potential profits. I forget the property training is not completely straightforward and there is a lot of groundwork to do. Yeah, the last thing as a lender we want to do is get first timers into a project and they're unable to follow through with that. And while we might be secured as a lender in that we're only lending a certain amount, whether that's 65% on the project, it doesn't make us feel very good if borrowers are, losing money on the other side with their deposit.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that a mortgage advisor would help you out with this if you wanted to get a mortgage through a short-term lender like Basecorp. But what would that plan and budget look like? So I'm assuming that the budget's in Excel. What does the plan look like?
It very much depends on the circumstances. Yeah, for us, it's really about credibility. For traders, you think, whether that's with an advisor or a property coach, it's demonstrating to us a strong knowledge of the property being acquired, a clear strategy on what will be undertaken and the time that will take, and be informed of the costs of that work. So, most of the information we see is in spreadsheet form, but the form of what that looks like varies depending on, the approach being taken for the property, the experience of the property trader. And, we can be flexible at times if the LVR is low. To the extent the LVR is more like 65 to 70, we might be, require to be a bit more precise. I think the other thing that's really important for us is the cash reserves on hand. If a borrower is demonstrating $500,000 of cash reserves and a $50,000 budget, we're probably quite relaxed how the numbers shake out. To the extent that number is quite tight, then we'll be having a closer look at it.
Yeah, so if you're borrowing a heap of money and you don't have a lot of spare cash in your bank account, so you guys are going to be a bit more stringent. If you've got bucket loads of money sitting in your bank account and you're not borrowing that much money against the property, well, you guys are going to be a bit more flexible. And that makes a lot of sense because it's all about how you're going to get repaid at the end of the day. Now, one thing I'm interested in as well is who you turned down. So can you give us an example or a case that you recently declined the mortgage for and why you said no? Just to give a sense of, what's doable and what's not doable.
Yeah, I think, certainly for most property trading, we do, fortunately, are able to say yes in the majority of circumstances. We recently had a customer secure at a property via a friend privately at what they believed was a steal. It's an example of a scenario we did say no. They had substantial cash available to complete the purchase and renovate before selling, so the deal will look good. However, When we looked at the property, we saw it needed substantial work. And the other thing that concerned us was the purchase was at a level well below what we saw market value based on our range of sources. And I think that made us concerned as to both the circumstances of the purchase and really the customer's knowledge of what they're really getting into. It made for a no under those circumstances. We just thought that perhaps they were being taken advantage of and that there was a more risk than they thought on that deal. Other declines for us really focus on the LVR being too high. And that's just around making sure that there's plenty of skin in the game for the borrower.
So if you've got 35% deposit to go buy an existing property and you're going to flip it and you've actually done your homework and you know that this is a good deal, there's some work to do on the property, but it's not substantial, it's not structural, it's pretty cosmetic. You've got a good idea of the costs, you've got a good idea what you're going to sell it for, and you've had a good old chat to your mortgage advisor, there's a pretty good shot you guys are going to approve that mortgage.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I mean, certainly at the moment, we've got plenty of funds for deals like that. And it would be a rare occasion where we looked at a deal like that. And it, from what you say, they've got everything in line and ready. And we saw it differently. So to the extent you are, you have listeners or borrowers lined up like that, absolutely, we think they'd be good candidates, again, through their mortgage advisor to deal with people like ourselves.
And just looking at the deals that have gone well on the other side then, could you share a few maybe do's and don'ts of property trading and property flipping?
So overall, we yet to see a trade deal that we've funded go truly bad. And so I think what we've gathered from the various traders we deal with is that you need to buy right. So that incoming purchase price is key. I think don't get too emotionally invested in the deal and purely treat it as a transaction. And I think buying under market value guarantees you're on the front foot from the get-go. And then it's about executing your plan as quickly as possible. And I think the other thing to really be, for people to be focused on is doing your best to avoid cost overruns on any renovations or delays on the sale exit. These only reduce the success of the deal by just imposing unforeseen costs on the deal. And finally, I think if you fingers crossed as to property market conditions during the time of the term of the funding is never a bad idea either. At heart, people are at the mercy of what the property market does over a 6 or 12 month period, and selling into a booming market is certainly a lot easier than the reverse.
And John, the other thing is, we talked about first-time property flippers and what you need to see, and that experience is very important. Let's say I've done a couple of deals through you and I've got a bit of experience as a property flipper. Do you give me a bit more leeway with my application?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the way we deal is that we require documents, application, supporting evidence, AML upfront, and then to the extent borrowers are returning to us for a second or third deal, it's a much more streamlined process and we turn things around same day in most cases. So experience and performance history does matter, and it's certainly easier to underwrite customers who are either larger or can demonstrate a successful history within the industry. I think larger customers with multiple properties can demonstrate a range of different exit strategies if things do turn. And I think those with experience also have a few more levers to pull if the market turns downwards. I think ultimately, though, for us, it's about credibility. And so that can be established through the initial work and setup and what we're presented with on our first deal, or alternatively, that track record, successful dealings over time.
And I know not everybody listening to the show is a property flipper and wants to go out there, buy a house, renovate it and flick it on. But even for those who maybe aren't as interested in that strategy, it is fascinating getting to talk to a lender and actually thinking about what checks you go through in order to approve a deal and what you turn down, and actually hearing the fact that you approve most deals that are well thought through and meet all of those requirements. So let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the Property Academy podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you're interested in getting a loan from Base Corp, before we hit record, John, you mentioned that about 95% of the loans you do actually come through mortgage advisors.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, to the extent you are looking to use in a lender like us, what we suggest is talk to your advisor and they'll be able to point you to the appropriate lender based on your circumstances. To the extent you can get into a bank, then absolutely people should be looking to, first and foremost, use their bank for funding. That may be by leveraging their family home or other investment assets they have to start property trading or property investing. But to the extent that's not available, and certainly with things like property trading, that is at the more difficult end to use the banks for that sort of funding, then talking to your mortgage advisor about solutions that people like Base Corp can provide is a really good start.
Fantastic. So have a chat to your mortgage advisor if you're keen to talk to Base Corp. Thanks Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight. We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.